Hello, everyone. It is a privilege to be able to be here among you at this Days of Unleavened Bread Feast. I have wanted to be with you at other times during festivals where I was elsewhere, but I'm very happy to be back once again after several years of being elsewhere. And I want you all to know that I appreciate your presence. Yesterday was interesting. Ever since I've been here, my time has been very, very packed. There are people that have wanted to talk with me, and I've had kidney dialysis, and I've undergone a very, very strange experience in the last year compared to the rest of my life. And last night, I had in my mind what I thought I was going to speak on. And I stayed up to about 4 o'clock in the morning, writing all the scriptures down so I wouldn't have to turn open the Bible and hunt around and flip the pages. I have it all written down, and it's here in my notes. However, when I woke up in the morning, I was led to speak on something totally different. Then I stayed up to 4 o'clock in the morning preparing. And so I quickly wrote down some notes and got them organized, and this is not what I prepared last night. And I don't like to keep it a secret what I talk on. I like to give a title, and pretty early in the game, I like to tell you what the title is. And the title of what I'm going to speak about is Facing Death. Facing Death. It's something that Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27 points out. In Hebrews 9, 27, it says, "And so it appeared for man to die once." It appeared for man to die once. In other words, all of us have to face death at one point or another in this physical life. But after this, the judgment. The judgment comes next. And I have to tell you that when I was 20 years old, I completely changed my diet. I read a book that had a very profound effect on me. And when I read that book, I gave up sugar. And I gave up junk food. And my health improved drastically over the next 4 months and continuing. I lost 25 pounds. My eyesight got better. I stopped getting pussy pimples. Various things happened. My health improved drastically when I made all those body changes. And it made me feel somewhat invincible. Because my health improved so much, and I felt that I was doing the right things from a dietary point of view. But here I was facing death. And it my whole attitude and my mind began to change in a different way. One of the things that happened from when I was 20 years old and upward is that my attitude toward the medical profession was extremely negative. I didn't think much of doctors. I didn't go to doctors. In fact, from the age of 20 until May of last year, less than 1 year ago. From 20 until then, I did not have a personal doctor. And didn't go to doctors for anything. And so it was a very, very unusual experience that something that I was doing to myself that didn't know I was doing to myself caused my kidneys to fail. And nothing to do with food, nothing to do with my eating habits. It did indirectly, but it's what I didn't know. In other words, I didn't know that I should not be drinking water out of very cheap, flexible plastic containers because the plastic got in the water, and then that was accumulating in my prostate gland and making it swell too big. And that were other things were doing that too, but I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about what caused it. But the fact is that I didn't even know that I was doing it to my own body. And so I wound up one day, I could not walk, could not stand, could not even crawl. My muscles became somewhat paralyzed because my kidneys were not doing its job, and I didn't know that. And so I found myself facing death. But what happened is when I couldn't do that, and my wife and someone else got me up on the couch, I had once before been totally healed of something that I was close to death. And that's something I guess I possibly could talk about. But what happened I don't know, I really, maybe should I, should I? Okay, I'll say something about way back in time. This was, believe it or not, before I was baptized. But some people would think that I should have been baptized then, even though I wasn't. And that's because I was Jewish in my background, and my mother had built a very strong prejudice against Christianity to me. And so my mind had a real prejudice against Jesus when I was a child, since I was a child. And so it was a very difficult thing for me to accept, even though I could see when I began to study the messianic prophecies of the Old Testament, how they all together, cumulatively, pointed to Jesus as the Messiah. And logically, I was a very logical person. I was studying, had a master's degree in mathematics at that point in time. And so logically, 1 + 1 = 2, everything was logic to me, logic. But emotionally, I could not accept Jesus. I could see logically that Jesus was the Messiah. But I couldn't be baptized because of logic. It had to be emotional. I had to get rid of the prejudice that I had. But here's what happened to me. Here's what happened. I was unpacking after a move. And I was unpacking. And in the unpacking, a piece of skin was hanging off of my left thumb. And it was annoying because every time I'd pick up another package, it would rub near my skin. And so in one second, I got annoyed with that feeling about the skin that was loose, and I just pulled it off. And a whole lot more skin came off than what I was thinking should come off. And I didn't know where I had a cuticle scissors to try to snip off just a tiny bit of the skin. And so in frustration, I just ripped a bunch of skin off. And I said, oh, well, I eat well. I eat healthy. My blood supply will clear that up by itself. And so, kind of a terrible attitude I had. And so what happened was that I just said, I'll let it go. Didn't even put a Band-Aid on there. Didn't even wash it off. And so I finished unpacking, and the next day went by, and the swelling got a little worse. And then the next day went by, and swelling got a little worse. And about the third day, I was going to college, and it got so painful that I couldn't do anything with my left hand. Yeah, I looked at it, and my left thumb was 1.5 times as wide as my right thumb. I would go like this, hold up the two thumbs, and I'd say, how much wider is that thumb than this thumb? And it was about 1.5 times as wide. And I had a 1 pound bag of baking soda that I used to clean off the battery of the car. And I tried to pick up that 1 pound bag of unopened baking soda, and it hurt so much I couldn't even pick it up. Because of the pain on my left thumb and how much the pus was coming out over there. And it was not coming out of the skin. It was stayed inside my thumb. And it got worse and worse. And what happened is I couldn't do anything with my left hand at all. So I had to pick up my briefcase with my right hand, put it over to the door, put it down, open the door with my right hand, then take the briefcase with my right hand outside the door, step outside the door, close my, nothing, even getting into the car. When I closed the door on my left side, I couldn't use my left hand to close it. I had to reach out as far as I could with my right hand and grab a hold of the door and close it with my right hand. I couldn't do anything. When I got into the classroom and I had to open up the book at a certain page, I opened it up with my right hand, stuck my left elbow in the spine of the book, and then I had to read the book with my left elbow stuck in the middle and write it. That was how bad it was getting. And finally, on the fifth day, I came home from school, and I looked at my two thumbs, and my left thumb was twice as wide as my right thumb. And I kept telling myself, well, it's going to go away, it's going to go away. My health is good because I eat well. And what happened was, I was Facing Death at that point. That's the title of my message today, is Facing Death. So that was the first time I was facing death. Recently, it's the second time. But the first time I was facing death, I said to myself at that point, it's not going away because of what I eat. It's not going to help. I've tried it, and I waited, and I waited. And furthermore, I saw that there was a swelling from my wrist, from my left wrist, and it was going down. And I took off my shirt and my undershirt, and I saw that it was within 2 inches of my armpit, my left armpit. And any place along there, when I gave the very slightest touch along that swelling, it was painful. And I thought, well, you know, I might not wake up the next morning. If that goes past my armpit, will I even still be alive? I had to say to myself. And I said, I don't know. I kind of doubt it. And so I said, well, now I'm at a crossroads. I'm a crossroads. And this is the first time I was at a crossroads. And I had one other crossroad that happened about a year ago. And the crossroad I was at, I had to say to myself, and it was in prayer. I said, and I knew that I hadn't been baptized. And I knew all that meant. I had finished all 58 lessons of the old correspondence course. So if you have, some people know what that is and some don't. Anyway. Anyway. My whole attitude was simply this. I had a choice. And the one choice was not to go to a doctor, but to go to a hospital. Because at that point, I was so bad that I don't think a doctor's office could do anything. And so it was either go to a hospital or totally rely on Jesus. That was my choice. And at that particular place where I was, I didn't even know any minister around there that I could have any trust in. Because I wasn't going to church yet. And so I finally decided in my prayer I was going to trust in Jesus. I was not baptized, and I just didn't care about the fact that I wasn't baptized. It was simply that I decided I was going to trust in Jesus, and I was just not going to go to a hospital because my attitude was so negative against the medical profession. I had a very, very, very negative attitude toward the medical profession. And so I decided, well, I don't know if I'm going to wake up, but I'm going to just do it. I'm just going to wait. And so to me, it was like I used to love to play table tennis, and I still do. And so it was like a table tennis match. In my prayer, I said, I am hitting the ball over to your side, God. And the ball is now on your side, and now it's up to you what you're going to do. Are you going to hit the ball back, or are you not? And that's my attitude. It was that way. And so then I went to sleep, and not knowing if I was going to wake up. And it was a cold winter day. I had the blanket on me, but the blanket was not on my arms. Because it was so painful, the blanket on my left arm would have been too painful for me to go to sleep. It was underneath my arm. Anyway, I did wake up. But I woke up with my two thumbs like this. I was trying to focus my eyes, and my two thumbs were looking in front of my eyes. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. My thumbs were the same size. And I was wondering, am I really seeing correctly? And so I took my right hand, and I was trying to touch my left thumb. And I did it with less than a fraction of an ounce of force. Just barely touching, because I knew last night it would be throbbing and it would be so utterly painful. And I touched it and it felt normal. And then I grabbed it and squeezed it with my right fist. And it felt normal. And I flung the blanket away. And I jumped out of the bed. And for the next 10 minutes, I was dancing and dancing all over the apartment. You wouldn't believe it. I had never danced so hard. I didn't know how to dance, but I didn't care. I danced and danced and danced for the next 10 minutes. And I was so thrilled that my thumb was normal. Oh, what a tremendous experience. And it helped to build my faith. But I had to step forward and risk what would happen if I didn't step forward. And so that was my first experience of facing death. And the second experience, when I could not crawl on the grass just to get in the house, because I didn't know what was going on, but the potassium level in my body was so high that my muscles got frozen. I couldn't crawl, even. And I could reach out my arm, and my wife came over, and I said, tug me into the house. And it took an hour for her to tug me in. With each tug with two hands, she pulled me about an inch and a half. And it took a whole hour for her to pull me in to the front door enough that she could close the door. And that night I slept on the floor, on the hard floor. And I went to sleep. And it was really rough. I couldn't figure out, why are my muscles frozen and I can't move? This happened last May, less than a year ago. And she and a friend managed to get me on the couch. And for the next 24 hours, I was praying and praying. And I knew that I had that healing experience earlier in my life. And I was wanting to have the same healing experience, but it wasn't happening. And I thought, well, there's things that I've got to learn. Things that I've got to learn that I don't know. I wasn't being healed. And so finally, it was a crossroads there, just like it was a crossroads way, way back. Going to the hospital or dying or letting whatever would happen would happen. And I finally got to thinking about, could I accomplish any more in life? Could I accomplish anything more in life if I remained living? And I thought, yes, there's a whole lot of things that I've photocopied. I mean, I hate to even say it, but yeah, I had over 35,000 pages of photocopies that I'd made over the last 40-plus years. And I had them all organized into folders on different topics. And some of that stuff I'd never written on yet. And so I thought, there's more that I have to write about. That I haven't explained. For example, people from time to time would come into the church and they would have a translation of the Septuagint. And they would read from the Septuagint. And it bothered me. The Septuagint. Why would they want to read from the Septuagint? And then they had to argue with them. And so I had for 30 years or so collected information about the Septuagint among all of the 35,000 pages of photocopies. And so finally I organized it, and someone asked me, do I want to speak on anything at the end of December? It just went by a few months ago. And I said, yes, I'll talk about the Septuagint. And so I decided I would organize all of the studies, and I did. And I spent a lot of time, hours and hours and hours, day after day, organized it all, and I gave a two-hour seminar on the Septuagint. And it was helpful to me to organize all my notes, and it was helpful for a lot of other people. So I understand it a whole lot better. And you can't find that on the Internet. Because the Internet does not publish copyrighted material. You can't look at that. But I had photocopied it. And I had it all there. And I just had to organize it and put it together. So I wrote a paper on the Septuagint and gave a two-hour seminar on that. So, and there were other things that I have that I still had left to write about and to talk about. So I felt, you know, maybe I shouldn't let myself die. Maybe I should just go to the hospital because I wasn't being healed. And so I finally said to Carol, my wife, besides that, I knew that I didn't want to leave the burden of doing the income taxes to her. Because I always did the income taxes for her chiropractic business. And it's a burden to do it. It was a nuisance for me, and I didn't want to put the burden on her. So I figured, I got to do the income taxes. I don't want to die now. So I said, all right, call up the hospital. Call up the ambulance and take me to the hospital. On the way to the hospital, I was unconscious. I was very, very close to death. When I got in, they put me under anesthesia. And when I woke up, I was... found out that I had a kidney disease. I was going to be on kidney dialysis. I had a urinary bag. I couldn't pee the way normal men pee. And my whole life was totally different when I woke up. And it was a very, very painful experience. And I had faced death, and the facing death title comes from what my choice was. I had the two choices, ambulance or just wait and die. And so I decided to take the ambulance. And it was that became a very humbling experience to me. Became a very humbling experience. A couple of scriptures I want to read about this. It's in Colossians 3:3 and then Colossians 3:4. It says, For you died, and your life is hidden in Christ. You died, and your life is hidden in Christ. And I thought, you know, without the ambulance, I'm as good as dead, and I died. But the ambulance, I had my attitude toward the medical profession was a conundrum to my mind. It was a conundrum to my mind because of the fact that I was so much against it, and now it was being used to prolong my life. And so I had to think about my attitude toward the prolongation of life. The prolongation of life. Because I got to thinking, you know, society, our country, is partly going into ruin because of the effort to prolong people's life. You know, what happens is people get cancer and they go to chemotherapy and hospitals and all that. And by the time it's over, it costs some people $100,000. With a cancer treatment, if they go the conventional route, $100,000, and so many people have cancer, and they're spending $100,000 per person the conventional way. How can the country survive at such an expense? I thought to myself, do I have a right to make the government pay for my prolongation of life? See, this is part of the idea of facing death that we have to think about. And I felt that I had an obligation to do whatever I could to help to get healed so I don't have to keep robbing the government of money to keep me on kidney dialysis. That costs $500 a kidney dialysis treatment. And I do three a week for 3.5 hours each. I'm on the table. And I have one of my granddaughters said, "Why you got a little band-aids on your arm?" And I said, "Well, they hook me up to a kidney machine, and one tube goes with a needle, fat needle, into one hole, and the blood comes out, and then it goes through the machine, and the machine comes back and returns it through the other hole with another tube. So I got two needles with 16-gauge needles stuck in my arm for 3.5 hours. And one of the things that I pray about is right before they stick the needles in, I look the other way, and I start praying Matthew chapter 11, 28 through 30, where Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And I say, "Jesus, give me rest when they stick the needle in." And I do that every single time they stick the needles in. And I have to be a witness to people. Have to be a witness. Of course, that's one of my big failings in life. One of my big failings in life that I have to confess, I was not being a witness to people. And there was a man at the kidney table yesterday when I was there, next to me. Every one of us is in a chair. And so he's in a chair next to me, and he was suffering, and I can tell he was suffering. And so finally I thought about it, and I said, you know, I found out his name was Billy. And I'll tell you, he had a big belly with a lot of water in it. They needed to take water out of him during the kidney. He had a big belly. His belly looked like a hill. And his name was Billy. And I thought, you know, hillbilly. he had a hill belly, but he was Billy. And so I said, you know, Billy, you look like a hillbilly. And I said, the thing that keeps me feeling good throughout this pressure and difficulty with the needles is Jesus. And I prefer to say Yeshua, but I figured the only thing he knows is Jesus. Whether he even knows of Jesus, I don't know. But I had to say, what helps me is Jesus. And so I had to be a witness to him. I knew he was suffering, and the nurse told me, he doesn't come in for every treatment. He skips treatment. So when he comes in, he's got more water than he should have, and he's feeling worse. And he comes in when he feels desperate. And so I felt that I had a witness to him, and I did. But did I ever do that before? Well, I do that now when the nurses come in to me. I witness to them. I witness to people now. Never before did that in my life. And so one of the things that I learned by my kidney dialysis is to start witnessing for people. Because Matthew chapter 28 is the Great Commission. And it says, go into all the world, preach the gospel unto everyone. And I was not doing it. And preaching the gospel is not preaching the calendar. It just isn't. My life was taken up with technical matters. And technical matters doesn't save anybody. And so this was, these type of thoughts went through my mind, and they go through my mind. And what do I do when I get on the kidney table? I bring with me some of those 35,000 pages of photocopies in a folder, and I put it down next to the table while I'm on the kidney dialysis, and I could read that, but I have learned not to take that out until I finish praying for other people. In other words, the most important thing when I'm on kidney dialysis is to pray for other people, which I didn't hardly ever do that before. I'll tell you why. It's because I felt that other people were digging their grave with a knife and fork because they weren't eating right. And so they were making themselves sick by not eating right. But I wasn't sick because I was eating right. I was too pompous. I had a wrong attitude. And so I had a difficulty praying for other people who were digging their grave with their knife and fork. Because I felt they were doing it to themselves. Yeah. But my attitude changed when I developed the kidney problem. Wow. And when I'm on kidney dialysis, I can rattle off about 20 different people's names who I pray for. I know people out in California that I'm praying for, people in Hawaii that I'm praying for. I find out that certain people have needs, and I go through one after the other, praying for each individual, what their needs are. And I stand on the bruised body of Jesus. And it says, by my stripes you are healed, he said. And that's what I stand on in my prayers for everyone. And I repeat that for everyone. By the stripes of Jesus, he's healed. I pray for people's marriage problems when I find out they have marriage problems. I pray for my wife, Carol, when she has certain needs she needs to. And I pray for her every time, just as I pray for a bunch of other people every time. And now I find out somebody's paining. I say to them, why do you have pain? I want to pray for you. Let me know what it is. And I don't necessarily mean right there on the spot, though I could do that too. But I want to know about their condition so that when I get on the kidney dialysis table, I could pray for them. And it has come that in the 3.5 hours I'm on the kidney table, maybe there's a 1/2 hour left that I finally read what I brought in to read it. That's in those 35,000 photocopies that I took a sheaf of there. But most of the 3.5 hours, I spend praying for other people. And there's a scripture that I read, I say, in my prayers. And it's I'm going to read it, James chapter 5, verse 16. It says, confess your sins to one another, and pray for one another that you may be healed. Pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And I say that, and I say, I'm not saying that in terms of my own righteousness, because we're all sinners. And there are things that happen in life that sometimes I do something, I say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't said that. And I feel annoyed with myself when that happens. And so I'm not perfect. I'm human. And I make mistakes. And sometimes in my thoughts and sometimes in what I say inadvertently that I look back on and I feel bad about. But I know that we have forgiveness. And so I look to God to forgive me and to make me righteous, not because I deserve it. And all of this is part of the learning process that began last May of being on dialysis and praying for people on the table and witnessing to people that I've never done before. You know, the biggest failure, for 38 years, I was preaching before an independent congregation in Dallas. And what happened was we were not going out to the public and getting more people to come in. We were not doing that. And as a result, we were getting older and older and older and older. People were dying. I wasn't dying because I was eating better than the other people who were dying. I would sometimes try to tell someone they shouldn't eat this and that, and they were too weak to do what I was doing. They just didn't want to do that. And they died. I went to funerals. And so, when I could, when I was close enough to go to funerals. But the fact remains that the congregation was dwindling and dwindling and dwindling because people were dying and other people were moving away. And finally I said to myself, you know, having less than a handful of people is not a church anymore. It was technically two or three gathered in his name, yes. But I needed to find a church that was growing in order that I could make amends for the lack of getting people to come into the church. And so I began to attend a different church that was growing. And so I began to look around, how can I help the people? I was looking, finding out, do you need help? Do you need help? How can I pray for you? And so I began to help and encourage the people there, which I began to do. And I began looking around for any new person would come in and go over to them and talk with them. And I opened up to them, and I opened up to encourage people and to pray for people. And it's the facing death. The title of this message is What I Learned from Facing Death. And what I learned from facing death. I want to read Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. It says, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than angels for the suffering of death. For the suffering of death. For the suffering of death. Crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. In other words, why did the incarnation have to happen, that God became flesh? So that he could feel what we feel. That's why. So that he could feel what we feel. So that he knew what the suffering was like, and that he could suffer and could take our place. The word atonement that's used so much in the Old Testament, when I did deep study of it, it really means substitution. He substitutes for us. That's what the word atonement means. He substitutes for us. And sometimes when I read a verse that has the word atonement in it, I don't say atonement. I say substitution. Because, in other words, the day of atonement is really the day of substitution. He substitutes for us. And so, I wanted to explain to you what happened when I was facing death, what effect it had on me, praying for other people, witnessing to other people for the first time in my life, trying to be more of an emotional person and less of a technical person, even though there's still technical things that I want to write. For example, I've gathered a lot of notes on the text of the New Testament, the Greek text. And I recognize why the scholars have got their minds so twisted. They really do. Twisted minds of scholars, instead of taking the text of the Greek that was the received text, and I didn't know why they should take the text of the received text for which the King James translation was made, but I know now why. But I've gathered hundreds and hundreds of pages that relate to that subject, and I need to write on the subject. So that's one of the things that I plan to do, is to write a book, or nearly a book, on why we need to go back to that text. And there's reasons, there's technical reasons why, and the scholars have their mind messed up. And they want to pick an inferior Greek text to translate the New Testament, and they shouldn't be doing that. But anyway, that is my message, facing death.